We call this meeting to order. This is our K-12 Finance Division Working Group on School District Integration Revenue. I just wanted to say thank you for coming out and listening to the auditor's report along with the Department of Ed, and they're going to give us some information today on what the integration revenue is all about, and I think we're going to find that it is going to be a good presentation to know that where the integration funding is going, what we can do about it, and how we can work together as a community to really enhance the integration funding. I think that's what I'm looking forward to. So we do have members of the working group. They want to real quickly say their name and what district they're from, and we'll go from there. So, Bud, if you want to start.
Steve, represent Bud Heidrichen, and I represent Lake Wobegon. Children are all above average, all right? Actually, Central Minnesota, Stearns, Canyon High, and Polk Counties.
State Representative Will Morgan. I represent Burnsville and a small part of Savage, and there are three of the 15 largest school districts in the state in my legislative district, the Apple Valley, Rosemont, Eagan, Burnsville, and Lakeville school districts.
Mindy Grayling, and I'm just east of Minneapolis and 10 minutes right across Larpenteur in St. Paul, 10 minutes north of the Capitol, Roseville, Lauderdale, St. Anthony Village.
Deborah Hillstrom, I have all of Brooklyn Center and parts of Brooklyn Park, which includes Minocca, Hennepin, Robbinsdale, Osseo, and Brooklyn Center School District.
Thank you, members, for attending the meeting today. We also have Carlos Mariani Rosa, who is possibly going to attend. He's got conflicted schedules here, so we look forward to seeing him, too. He's a representative from St. Paul on the west side. So, again, hopefully he'll be able to attend this meeting. This meeting is probably going to last about, an hour and a half or so. So those of you who, just timekeeping-wise, 5:30 or so, we should be able to complete our meeting, hopefully. If we need to run over 5 or 10 minutes, I think the committee members are okay with that. But I hear they have other commitments to do, too, this evening. So we want to make sure we can get our issues on the table and to go forward. Did everyone get an agenda and information? If not, I believe it's right, but when you walk in the doorway there, hopefully everyone has the information so we can share this information with everyone. Right now we're going to do the review and update of the Legislative Auditor's Report from 205, and it's the evaluation report. We have Judy Randall, who is the Program Evaluation Division Officer of the Legislative Auditors. If you could just say your name and what position your role is.
Thank you. Mr. You know, there's no mic, I just realized down here. So I'll just talk really loudly. Can you hear me?
Okay.
Yeah.
Being taped or not?
Does that work better? Okay, good. My name is Judy Randall, and I'm with the Legislative Auditor's Office. And as you know, we released an evaluation on school district integration in 2005, about 2 years ago, almost exactly. And I'm happy to be here today to kind of go over our findings and recommendations and also just provide a general overview of the program. I'm happy to answer questions, you know, whenever or at the end, however you want to handle it. Let me start with kind of the bottom line findings of our evaluation. So the overall conclusion is that the program needs more focus and oversight. Specifically, we found that the purpose of the program is not clear, that districts use the revenue in a variety of ways, some of which were questionable, that the Department of Education had not provided required oversight, and that the funding formula had some unintended consequences, some of which were potentially negative. I'm going to spend a little bit of time on each of these, but before I do that, let me take a step back and provide a little overview of the integration revenue program, kind of remind you about who's involved, who's eligible, and how that all works. And let me remind you, too, that we did this 2 years ago, so some of our numbers are a bit old, but I think that the department has some updated numbers they'll be able to provide you with. So in 2005, when we conducted the evaluation, 80 school districts received integration revenue for a total of $79 million. Districts are either identified as eligible for the program or they can voluntarily participate. There are three different ways for districts to be identified as eligible. The first is if a district has a racially identifiable school. A racially identifiable school is one in which the percentage of protected students is significantly higher than the district-wide average for the grades served by that district. So, for example, Bloomington had an elementary school with about 73% of its student enrollment were protected students. Well, that was more than 20 percentage points higher than the district-wide average of protected students in elementary school, which was about 35%. So as a result, that school was identified as racially identifiable, and then the district was eligible for integration revenue. Districts are also identified as eligible if they are a racially isolated district. For these districts, it's the district's protected student enrollment as a whole as compared with the neighboring or adjoining district. And in this case, both the isolated district and the adjoining district are eligible for integration revenue. And I have this map, which I guess it does work up there. So here in the red is St. Paul. St. Paul's enrollment in 2005 was 72% protected students. The yellow districts around are the neighboring or adjoining districts. You can see that the difference in the percentage of the protected student enrollment was more than 20 percentage points. As a result, both St. Paul and the neighboring adjoining districts are eligible for integration revenue. So here you can see Roseville, North St. Paul, South Washington County, South St. Paul, West St. Paul. All these districts are eligible for integration revenue and are expected to work together in a multi-district collaboration on an integration plan. In addition to being identified as eligible for the program, districts can also voluntarily participate. And here, back to my map, if I show you that. So you've got St. Paul there with a 72% in the red. That's the isolated district. The neighboring districts are in yellow. So the red and yellow districts are identified as eligible. And then those pinkish-purple districts are voluntarily participating in the program. So there you've got White Bear Lake, Mount Amidi, Stillwater, and Invergrove Heights have voluntarily participated to work with St. Paul on its integration revenue plan and in this multi-district collaborative. Here's just a map showing you across the state. Again, this is in 2005, and it has changed somewhat of where the districts that received the funding were located. So you can see the concentration in the metro area and then also in the southwestern part of the state. But, you know, it's spreading out. There's the pocket around Rochester and Pelican Rapids, I believe. That's kind of the quick and dirty overview of who's eligible for the program. Let me talk now about some of our findings. As I mentioned, one of the main findings is that the purpose of the program was not clear. And there are lots of different ideas about what this program is about. When we conducted our evaluation, we visited 20 different school districts. And we heard more than 20 different ideas about what this program was about. And I'll share some of them with you here. So some folks said, well, the purpose is to increase parent involvement in the school, to provide more staff development, to offer all-day kindergarten, to achieve student success, to integrate the community, and it just goes on and on and on. You can see there's really a wide range of topics that people thought fell under the integration revenue program. It really just keeps going. There we go. So what we did is we looked at this list and we listened to everything that people said and we kind of boiled it down to six big themes on how districts viewed integration revenue and what the purpose was. So the first big theme was to achieve racial balance and integration. The next big purpose was to address the achievement gap. Another big thread was staff development. Another one was increasing multicultural awareness among students and staff. To increase community involvement in the school was the fifth. And finally, to increase interracial contact, which is the actual language in the statute. Now, if you look at these six purposes, I mean, these are pretty broad, and frankly, districts can justify pretty much any type of spending under the guise of this program if these are what the purposes are of this program. So that kind of leads me to the next finding, which is that districts use the integration revenue in a variety of ways, some of which were perfectly reasonable and some we found questionable. In a metro area, a lot of districts work together to provide inter-district magnet schools. So you've got the East Metro Integration District around St. Paul, the West Metro Education Partnership around Minneapolis, and the Northwest Suburban Integration School District up around Osseo and Brooklyn Center. And those collaborators have worked together to develop inter-district magnet schools where students residing in any of the districts in the collaborative can cross the district lines and go to those magnet schools. Districts also in the metro area did a lot of classroom partnerships. So St. Paul, for example, did a lot of these. A St. Paul classroom would pair up with a Roseville classroom, and they would work together on a class project, get together, and the students from the different districts would work together in a meaningful way and develop meaningful relationships. In outstate Minnesota, doing some of these activities during the school day is a little more challenging because of the geographic distances. So a lot of those districts would do things outside of the traditional school day or school year, such as summer academic camps or summer soccer camps. So again, they were ways that brought students together on a regular basis from different districts and kind of encouraged, again, kind of a meaningful interaction. A number of districts, many, many districts actually, also used the funding for multicultural festivals to increase awareness and understanding of different cultures. Now, some of the uses of the funding we thought were questionable. For example, a few districts said they used the funding for textbooks, for history textbooks or social studies. And several districts use the funding for English language learner services. In our view, these are existing responsibilities of all school districts. I think from the legislative auditor's office perspective, the thing that was the most troubling about this program is that not all districts received this funding. You know, I mean, 80 districts in 2005 received this funding. So as a result, we think it's important that there are specific purposes or uses for this money. You know, I'm sure there are lots of districts that would like extra money to buy textbooks or to provide more English language learner services, but they didn't qualify for the integration revenue. So I think finding some balance between, you know, the limits placed on who gets the revenue and the use of the revenue is important. Our next big finding was that the department has not provided required oversight. For example, the department was responsible for evaluating school districts' integration plans. The department approved most districts' integration budgets before they're spent, but there was no evaluation after the fact on how the districts actually spent the money, whether the districts were meeting their goals, and an evaluation of whether or not the program was successful. Similarly, the department is required to review all districts that have a racially identifiable school and determine if the school was racially identifiable due to intentional segregation. And at the time of our evaluation, the department was pretty far behind in conducting those reviews. The department is also responsible for working with districts that had racially identifiable schools for 3 or more years. And at the time, again, of our evaluation, that had not occurred in any meaningful way. During the course of our evaluation, the department implemented some more oversight and made some improvements, and I know that you have representatives here from the department today to talk more about what they've done since our evaluation, so I'll let them speak to that. Our last major finding was regarding the funding of the program, and we thought the funding distribution had some unintended consequences. First, we thought the funding does not reflect the district's different needs or responsibilities within the program. And also, we thought the funding resulted in, the way the funding is allocated, it results in limited oversight of Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Duluth, and also a voluntary district. I'll spend a couple of minutes on talking about those in a minute, but let me take another step back and just remind you about how the funding is allocated and how that mechanism works. Districts are funded on a per-pupil rate. In law, Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Duluth have their per-student integration revenue rates laid out. So Minneapolis receives $480 per student for integration revenue, St. Paul $445, Duluth $206. The difference between Minneapolis and St. Paul is because Minneapolis has authority for a $35 excess levy, so that difference is local dollars. All other districts have their funding rate determined based on their percentage of protected students in their enrollment. So, for example, an isolated school district receives $92 per student if its proportion of protected student enrollment is less than or equal to 15%, and receives $129 if the proportion of its protected students in its enrollment is more than 15%. And this is true for the adjoining school districts and the districts with racially identifiable schools. So they receive either $92 per student or $129 per student, depending on the number of protected students in their enrollment. Voluntary districts receive $92 per student regardless. So the funding rate is determined based on the percentage of protected students in the student body. But the total integration revenue amount is determined by taking this rate and applying it to the total student enrollment. So here, this slide kind of gives you a feeling of how much funding these districts are actually getting. So Minneapolis and St. Paul are receiving, again, this is in 2005, around $21 million each in integration revenue. Of course, they have the highest funding rate, and they offer among the largest districts in the state. So they are receiving by far the most integration revenue. This just shows you the range for some selected districts. You can see Anoka-Hennepin, again, in 2005, was receiving integration revenue at that $92 rate, but it's a large district, and so it received over $4 million in integration revenue. And it goes down to Round Lake, which received funding at that lower rate of $92, and also the three small districts, so it just received $15,000 in integration revenue.
Excuse me, Judy, would you like questions in between, or do you...
However you'd like to do it.
Because we have a member that would like to ask a question. Another thing here, I just want to make sure that we follow our agenda and let folks know this is one of our three meetings that we're planning to have. This meeting alone is just for the members to ask questions, and then we'll have another meeting later on when the districts and folks that have questions will want to testify. That'll be our next meeting, just so we're aware. But keep your questions, because we want to hear of those questions. And Representative Mindy Gladden has a question for you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Ms. Randall, I just wondered, looking at these types of districts and the money that they get, and then those uses up there, some of which are questionable, is there any correlation to the type of district and the questionable uses? I'm just thinking, like, if you're a voluntary district, oh, we need new textbooks, maybe we ought to apply for this money. Is there any correlation like that or not?
Mr. Chair, Representative Greiling, not that I'm aware of kind of that clean and easy. You know, different districts really had different ideas about what was appropriate. And also, these districts work together in multi-district collaboratives. And so, you know, you'd have the isolated districts and the adjoining districts, and then if you had the voluntary districts, they also would all kind of have to agree on the appropriate use of the funding. So, so you might have, you know, all different types of districts buying the textbooks, or you might have, you know, you might have the isolated district and the adjoining district and the voluntary district within a collaborative saying, yeah, let's all buy textbooks, or yeah, let's all reduce class size, or let's do the inter-district magnet school. So it's they have a plan that they're all supposed to kind of follow. That being said, the textbooks I saw in more outstate Minnesota, but it wasn't necessarily aligned with the type of district.
One second, please. We just have the honor to the presence of our senator here, Patricia Torres-Ray. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Can I continue?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So on this funding chart here, let me draw your attention specifically to the Eden Prairie and Mountain Lake school districts, because they kind of set up an interesting comparison. Eden Prairie is a voluntary district, one of those purple districts on the map, and it received funding at that $92 funding rate. But it's a large district, and so because the funding rate is applied to the total student enrollment, it received over $1 million in integration revenue. Mountain Lake is one of those red isolated districts on the map, and it received funding at that $129 funding rate, but it's a pretty small district. So again, because the funding rate is applied against the total student enrollment, it received $74,000 in integration revenue. So pretty big difference there. Two other districts that set up this comparison are Stillwater and Brooklyn Center. So Stillwater is one of those purple voluntary districts. In 2005, 5% of its student enrollment were protected students. Brooklyn Center is one of those red isolated districts. In 2005, its protected student enrollment was 66%. Again, because of the way the funding is allocated, Stillwater, that voluntary district, received almost $1 million in integration revenue. And Brooklyn Center, again, the isolated district, received not quite $250,000 of integration revenue. And if you look at this on a per protected student basis, Stillwater received over $2,200 per protected student, while Brooklyn Center received $223 per protected student. So we think there's really kind of a disconnect between the way the funding is allocated and then the needs and perhaps the responsibilities under the program. We also thought that the way the funding is allocated results in limited state oversight of the revenue. The Department of Education does not approve the integration revenue budgets for Minneapolis, St. Paul, or Duluth. All other districts must submit their integration revenue budgets to the department and have it be approved before they're eligible to receive the funding. That's not the case for these three districts, because these three districts receive the funding as written out in statute. In 2005, these three districts received over half, it was 57% at that time, of the integration revenue. So the department does not have approval authority for over half of it.
Excuse me, yeah. Representative Hillstrom?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So you stated that the department approved the budget of everyone but Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Duluth. So does that mean that they approved the textbooks?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hillstrom, to the extent it was laid out in the integration budget, they would have.
Thank you.
Let me just also add, it may not have been as clear in the budget. You know, the budgets really range a lot, and the department can speak to how they've increased that oversight. But some of the budgets would be really detailed about everything they're doing, and then some would say provide resources. You know, and so the textbooks could have been hidden in something like that.
Thank you.
Okay, so the department does not have approval authority for these three districts, and they represent over half of the integration revenue allocated by the state. The department also does not have the ability to approve whether a voluntary district participates in the program or not. So Stillwater, one of the purple districts that works with St. Paul, Stillwater wants to work with St. Paul in its integration plan. It calls up, I'm simplifying this a bit, but basically it contacts St. Paul, says, you know, we'd like to work with you. St. Paul says, okay. They participated in the collaboration plan, and now Stillwater is eligible to receive the integration revenue. There's no oversight by the state to determine whether or not Stillwater can really meaningfully participate in the program. In 2005, there were six voluntary districts that received $3.4 million in integration revenue, and they were Stillwater, White Bear Lake, Eden Prairie, Matamudai, Inver Grove Heights, and Murray County Central. So I know I've done a lot of talking. Let me kind of give you a recap of our big findings. The purpose of the program is not clear. Districts use the funding in a variety of ways, some of which are questionable. The Department of Education had not provided required oversight. And the funding formula has some unintended consequences, some of which are potentially negative. So what did we recommend that we do about it? Well, our first and I think most important recommendation is that the legislature clarify the purpose of the program. Is this program about racial balance? Is it about the achievement gap? Is it about increasing racial tolerance? The district staff that we met with really wanted clarity on what they should do with this, what the program was about, and the Department of Education staff that we worked with at the time wanted clarity. Again, I think it gets back to the fact that not all districts receive this funding, and so to ensure that districts use this funding appropriately and how the legislature intended, I think it's important for the legislature to clarify what they wanted through this program. We also recommended that the department fulfill its responsibilities. We recommended that the legislature consider changing the funding formula so it better reflects the needs and the responsibilities of the districts in the program. And finally, we recommended that the legislature close the oversight gap. Specifically, we think the legislature should give the Department of Education authority to approve the integration revenue budgets for Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Duluth. And we also think the legislature should give the Department of Education approval authority for voluntary districts to ensure that they can contribute meaningfully to the integration revenue plans that the multi-district collaboratives have set forth. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you for your report, Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Randall, can you tell me how long has the Integration Revenue Program been in law?
I believe it's it's been a couple of years since I've done this, but I believe it's in the beginning of our report. I think 97 is what's jumping out of my mind. Yeah, 97 is when the Integration Revenue Program was created. And it has grown substantially since then in terms of the number of districts that we have.
So we have about 10 years of experience with the law on the books, and I guess I'm feeding back there, Mr. Chair. Maybe that'll help. My next question is this. In those 10 years, do we have any, or did the Office of Legislative Auditor find any statistically significant evidence that any of these programs have achieved any of the purposes given in the law?
Mr. Chair, Representative, no, we didn't. I mean, the short answer is no. We did not find any evidence of that, in large part because there's been really no evaluation of what's been implemented, but also because the purposes are not clear. So, I mean, all really comes back to the fact that what was intended by this program is not clear. So individual districts have done some different analysis. You know, some have done surveys on racial bias and tolerance, and some districts track their test scores and will show both of those things as evidence of success or not of the Integration Revenue Program. So those are pretty different things, and there's been no statewide evaluation. At the time we did the evaluation, the department had not done any evaluation. Again, it gets back to what is the purpose of the program, and against what are you going to be measuring the district's use of the funds.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions of the committee members at the present time?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman Granville. On page 39, the funding formula recommendations, are they in any priority order?
Not necessarily. No. Representative Garland. Not necessarily. I'm just looking at them again. Provide funding based on the responsibility of a district, whether it's isolated or adjoining or voluntary. Put in some different tiers based on protected student enrollment. Or no, I think we wanted to set forth a couple of different ways to look at it, hoping that something would be palatable.
Thank you.
Senator,
thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Randall, I want to talk about the recommendation. I want to make sure that I understand this. In the recommendations, you say that MDE should fulfill its responsibilities, but then your recommendation also says that we should close oversight gaps and that we should give MDE the responsibility. If they're not fulfilling the responsibilities, why do we want to give them the responsibility for oversight of other sites like St. Paul and Minneapolis?
Mr. Chair, Senator, I think that's a good question. And we thought about that when we were putting together the recommendation. Well, if they're not doing what they're supposed to be doing now, why would we give them more? I think in part because they were improving and showing that they were already making some changes and could probably handle additional oversight. And I don't know for sure, but I've looked through their handout and I think that they have continued to increase their oversight. Also, because I think it's a matter of having some level of oversight over the Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Duluth in particular. I mean, even though the department was not doing a great job on what they were doing, all the other districts still had a committed budget, and it still did get looked at by the department. Those three districts didn't have to get the review from the department, and it was over half of the funding. So we thought there should at least be a mechanism in place to allow that additional oversight.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I wish to make a statement here because this is something that I see as I read more and more information related to the achievement gap and the responsibility that the state has towards academic performance for children of color. Part of the problem that I see is that there is really no mechanism in place for accountability. And that oftentimes then we're trying to figure out who is really accountable. But because we have these laws in place that do not say who is accountable, we tend to really look at the children's performance and to look at families' responsibility and lack of accountability. And this is an issue that clearly is it's a problem in every area. And more people at the local level is asking us to put in legislation language that is more consistent and talks about accountability, that clearly articulates accountability and measures for evaluation. You know, how do we actually conduct evaluation of programs because it's not there today. And so we see this kind of issues and trying to determine who is responsible. Is it the state? Is it the district? Is it the family? And how is the money being used?
Thank you. I have a couple questions. A couple of them, and it leads to what the senator has just alluded to, but Minneapolis itself, from what I understand, has a court order since 1973 for desegregation. Why would you think that the Department of Ed would oversee more than a court order responsibilities, because you mentioned that was one of your recommendations. And the other one is, did you see a problem within the Minneapolis integration plan or funding mechanism that really needs to be addressed?
Mr. Chair, members, and somebody from the department might have know this better than I since it's been a couple of years, but my understanding is that Minneapolis is no longer under the court order.
Okay, so I'm correct on that.
So that addresses that one.
Okay.
And then the second question was regarding, did I see problems specific to Minneapolis? Is that right? Minneapolis, from, again, what I recall, I apologize, it's been some time, was largely focused on class size reduction. And again, the department might have a better, you know, more firsthand knowledge of what their program was. I think it gets back to what is the purpose of the program. You know, is class size reduction appropriate for integration revenue? And I think that's a legislative decision. I think that's a policy decision. I think they're, and I don't want to put words in their mouth, and so I hope you do have them here to speak in future meetings. I think the idea is, you know, their focus is on the achievement gap, and reducing class size was a method to do that. You know, I think it just gets back to what we want the program to be about.
And I guess the second part of that, did you see that in the St. Paul and Duluth districts also, same capacity?
At St. Paul, did not do the class size reduction. They were much more, and I know we've got the gentleman right here who could maybe answer that better than I. The way St. Paul seemed to use its integration revenue was a lot more magnet schools within the district, so a lot of transportation within the district, moving students, you know, outside of their neighborhood boundaries. So they used their funding in quite different ways. Duluth had a racially identifiable school, and to be honest, I can't recall exactly how they used their funding at this point.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Randall, did Minneapolis go to the class size reduction use of this money after they went back to neighborhood schools, or did they do that all along? And maybe we need to ask Minneapolis.
Yeah,
I need to.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I don't think I could answer that. Sorry.
Representative Budgett.
Thank you. Ms. Randall, I have a couple questions, and I've been interested in this issue. As you all know, I think I've had legislation the last number of years dealing with this particular situation. My first question has to do with the history. Okay, I wasn't here when they did establish by statute. I'm wondering how St. Paul got within the statutes. When you look at right now, they're at percent of color, they're at they were at 13.605. And school districts right now, if they were at that percent, would not qualify of getting into integration aid. Is there, that's my first part of the question. The second part of the question, can schools fall out of receiving this aid if the percentages go below a certain threshold?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I don't know where you have your number on St. Paul. St. Paul, at least in 2005, it was about 72% protected student enrollment.
Okay, looking at the integration revenue for 08, and on page 6 of that, I think we got it all in front of us.
Is that Duluth, perhaps?
Yeah, referring to Duluth, yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, nice and simple?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Duluth, I'm sorry. Yeah, there are three of them that by statute were defined as being receiving a certain amount of money when it was set up, and I was just wondering by history how Duluth qualified and why they are still qualifying.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Chair, I wasn't here either when it all started, so I can't give you the history. Why they are currently qualifying is because they have a racially identifiable school. So within the district, there is a significant difference in where students, protected students, go to school. So there's a school, at least one school within Duluth, where the percentage of protected students is significantly higher than the district-wide average of protected students. So they qualify under that identifiable school piece of it. And as to the second point of your question, yeah, districts can come in and out of being eligible. In fact, I know I can't remember exactly which district, but in the southwestern part of the state, there's a district or two that some years will be identified as an adjoining district, and some years will not be identified as an adjoining district. And it might be Maury County Central, which is why it was one of the voluntary districts, because they didn't know from year to year if they were going to be eligible for the funding under the traditional definition or not. So they chose to participate at least as a voluntary district in the years when they didn't qualify as eligible. So yeah, as the numbers change, districts can come in and out.
Thank you. In other words, if, say for example, I'll use Long Prairie, Regal School District, that I think K through 4 are right around 35-36%, and they do not qualify. Now, had they divided up, if they divided up the school district into a separate, say for example, they paired with Green Eagle, if they established a school to use the elementary in Green Eagle and just have the first five grade school there, they would then qualify. Am I understanding that right? Like St. Paul has done?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I don't know the exact demographics in those two school districts, but what would it would have to be the percentage of protected students in a school district as compared to the district-wide average of protected students mm-hmm. in the same grade level. So if all of the elementary kids in the whole district are at one school, then you wouldn't have anything else to compare it to, and they wouldn't be... there wouldn't be a 20 percentage point difference between the protected student enrollment of that school and the district-wide percentage of protected student enrollment. Are we getting all jumbled up?
Yeah, no, and I understand it because I know that there's school districts that the higher percentage of minority, for example, in this particular case, would be in Long Prairie. So you're telling me that by throwing the kids together into one school system, it's keeping them from receiving this aid. In other words, they would be better off, like Green Eagle has a very small percentage, and they just went through this combination. So they would be better off, in order to access these funds, is to separate.
Mr. Chair, Representative, if what you're describing is correct, then yes. And I think that is one of the things we found with the funding, is there's a disincentive. The way the funding is allocated, there's a disincentive to achieve racial balance, because if you do have kind of segregated schools like that and thereby qualify for the funding, you know, if you did merge them together and then you didn't have that segregation issue, then you would no longer potentially be eligible for the funding. So yes, that's an issue.
Representative Grady.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Randall, now Native American students are just plain not counted because of sovereignty, or how does that work?
My understanding, Mr. Chair, Representative Grady, my understanding is that and I know we have a footnote that addresses this, and the issue is if I can find it. Oh, here we go. On page 7 in the report, footnote 7, and I'll just read it for people who don't have it right here. A school that is racially identifiable solely due to a concentration of American Indian students attempting to serve the unique academic and cultural needs of American Indian students is not required to participate in the program. However, American Indian students are counted with other protected students in determining whether eligibility requirements are met. So if it's, you know, if the school is a Native American school and they want to serve the unique cultural and history and historical aspects of that community, then they don't need to participate. But those numbers do get counted with other school districts as part of the percentage of protected students.
So, Mr. Chair,
yes.
Ms. Randall, they could participate. It's just their choice.
That's my understanding.
Okay.
Any other questions for the... I have one last question, I think. I have many, but this I want to hear from MD. Through your recommendations here, it doesn't say or state, and we fight our bodies of legislation trying to find resources. What would your recommendation be as far as resources to commit to the integration revenue and balance things out? Is there any findings of how the auditor's report would suggest to either have legislation
redefine the programs, those efforts. How would the auditors, just given us some examples of possibly recommendations?
Mr. Chair, members, we did not make a recommendation regarding whether there should be more or less funding in the program. But I think what really needs to happen, and I'm looking for a document, what really needs to happen is the legislature needs to decide what the purpose of the program is. I mean, not to keep harping on that, but that's really, I think, fundamental. Do you want this to be about racial balance? Do you want it to be about the achievement gap? Or there's also kind of the interracial contact, which is actually the language in law, which is kind of nebulous, but maybe a watered-down version of integration, of traditional integration and racial balance. So I think once you figure out what you want this to be about, then the funding would follow. You know, if it's about the achievement gap, you know, my two cents is then that really broadens who's eligible for the funding, you know. And right now, the way the funding is allocated is based on this protected student enrollment, which, because of the way the funding is allocated is based on the differences between districts and schools on the percentage of protected student enrollment. And therefore, that has meaning then. If that's the way the funding is allocated, presumably that's in there for a reason. And so if that's what the legislature wants to focus on, I just think it all comes down to what do you want the program to be about, and then the amount of money and the allocation of the money flows from there. It's not a very direct answer, I realize, but I think it really comes down to what do you want the program to be about.
Are there any questions of the committee? Well, thank you, Mr. Randall. I'm sure that we will be in touch. This is not only the one first meeting. I believe we're having three. And so we will keep communications. Are you going to be sticking around in case...
Yeah, I'll be here for the duration.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Next we have the Minnesota Department of Ed, Leona. She's the Director of School Choice Programs and Services, Minnesota Department of Ed. And if you could... say your name, and for the record, we appreciate it.
Leona Durden, D-E-R-D-E-N.
You have another individual with you?
Yes. Mr. Chiak, can you remember
his name? Excuse me, could he say his name for the record?
Yes, I'm Bondo Nyemwe, Program Administrator for School Choice at the Department of Education.
Thank you, Bondo. I know Bondo myself personally. Thank you for coming. If you would go ahead and do your report, then we'll take questions. Do you want us to wait on the questions, or should we...
If you can wait, that would be great.
Okay.
And Mr. Chair, community members and Senator Torres, my name is Leona Durden, and I am the new Program Director for School Choice Programs, which includes not just integration, desegregation, it's charter schools, alternative learning centers, home school, Indian education, online learning, learning year, so all this, anything that's outside of a traditional public school. I've been with the department for 3 months now, but prior to coming to the department, I was a principal with the Minneapolis Public Schools in North Minneapolis. I invited Mr. Nyemwe to come because he's been with the department for a year to give the overview, and he's been working directly with integration and with the different districts, and I think that he will be valuable as being a part of the discussion. I can say that as the new program director, being at the department for 3 months, I have met with many of the districts, the majority of them, who are receiving the integration aid, and just for them to give me a summary of how they're using the money and just some ideas about the different programs that they're providing. And I've also started visiting different schools along with Mr. Nyemwe, just to see how the program is actually being implemented. So basically, I do know that the auditors asked MDE to establish criteria for allowable expenditures reflecting different district responsibilities and to oversee the program more closely and to identify and spread word about promising practices. So that's one of the reasons I took it upon myself to meet with all the districts to get more information as well as to begin visiting the district. But without further ado, I'm going to ask Mr. Nimway if he could do talk more about what the department is doing and the different recommendations, how we've implemented different things based on the auditor's recommendations, and then some other initiatives that's happening at the department.
Thank you, Leona. Mr. Chair and your representative, I'm going to proceed in a different format, but before I start, can everybody hear me? Mm-hmm. Thank you. I'd like to thank Judy for an excellent report on what the auditors had found that the department was or wasn't doing. We are here representing the Department of Education, and I would like to take the full responsibility of accepting the recommendation made by the auditor, and also accepting any future implementation of what needs to be done. And so in part of my presentation today, and I hope everyone was able to get a copy at the door, I'm going to do a presentation, and after the presentation, I'm going to kind of recap a little bit by summarizing some of the initiatives or efforts that have been addressed as a result of the auditor's report, and others that have not been addressed, and then we can have some questions. So if you have any questions, please hold them until the end, and then you can ask, and we'll be willing to answer any of those that you may have. Currently, as I'm speaking, I want you guys to keep in mind the demographic changes throughout Minnesota and how the integration revenue impacts the school district that receives that revenue. In addition to that, I want you guys to note, after Judy's presentation, that as it is, as the rule, the Minnesota rule is written, there is no incentive for desegregating school district. Because what that means is once you desegregate or achieve a racial balance in your school district, you lose the funding. And so one of the problems is that school districts may or may not intentionally engage in best practices. I also want to mention that it's been 1 year that I've been at the Department of Education, and this 1 year has been one of research and looking at what's working, what's not working, why has it not worked, and how can we make it better for Minnesota children to learn. With that in mind, evaluation is key to everything that we do. And so it is true that the Department of Education is supposed to be evaluating programs after 3 years or after 4 years if you're part of a joint powers. And there is no set evaluation method in place to be able to evaluate that. The responsibility of the evaluation process is left to the school district. And my final comment before I dive into my presentation is that as part of Leona's addition to our division, as part of my addition and many other people in the division, we are committed to visiting the school district, asking those questions, and be able to come up with a comprehensive plan and some recommendations that we'd like to bring to the legislature in order to have a meaningful, purposeful integration mechanism for the state of Minnesota. So, first things first. The SMD to establish, I think Ben already asked this question, obviously the program more closely and identify and spread word about permitting practices. So the question we ask is, why does it matter to do those things that were recommended? We believe that it provides a real resource to increase justice and equity to students from families who have less access to opportunity, and it's very important to us. Secondly, I want you guys to know that the integration revenue in Minnesota is $80 million. Think about it, $80 million. What if we achieve with $80 million? I can do some comparison with other states that are receiving $100 million and they've really done wonderful things. I couldn't agree more with the auditor that we need a little more guidelines added to the rule in order to measure the progress of our integration program. Thirdly, why does it matter? We believe it matters because further scrutiny is needed because of the important mission of integration. I believe many of us in this room understand why our schools need to be integrated as we look at the global world as it's changing, to be able to provide our students in Minnesota the opportunity to interact in a more global world with the expertise that they need to be successful in life. Districts are receiving integration revenue, and these are the most up-to-date numbers. I think Jody was looking at numbers from 2005. These are more up-to-date numbers. So we have 97 school districts in Minnesota that have voluntary integration plans. As I keep talking, keep in mind the word voluntary and think about the concept of voluntary. And then you may get some answers of why we are seeing some lapses into our integration program. In 2000, there were 8 racially isolated school districts and 27 adjoining. When we jump back to 7 years later, in 2007, we have 27 racially isolated school districts and 87 districts that are adjoining. We might remember what I said about demographic changes. So let's fast forward again, 2000. We have 32 racially identifiable school sites. And I want to make sure that everybody understands that there is a difference between racially isolated school districts and racially identifiable school sites. And then in 2007, we have 50 racially identifiable school sites. So the numbers of schools and districts participating in our integration revenue program are growing. And when you look at the revenue, it was down to $65 million and it has gone up to $80 million. Is a question I may ask is, are we sufficiently meeting the needs of the districts that are receiving these dollars? I have a chart which kind of summarizes the program as of 2007. There is 97 school districts that are eligible. There is 7 new school districts. And then there is 3 school districts that receive more than $129 per student, and I think that's Duluth, Minneapolis, and St. Paul, as alluded by Jody in her presentation, Julie. And district receiving $129 per student, we have 37, and then we have 57 school districts that receive $92 per student. And in the state of Minnesota, we have 4 districts that are not participating, that are eligible to participate in our integration revenue program. In terms of revenue, keep in mind again that it is an estimated number. So regular integration revenue is about $84 million. The reason why I bring the idea, the notion of estimated, because I talked about $80 million in appropriation, but since we're talking about estimates, we have $84 million as of this year. Alternative attendance, total of $969,000 and $857,000, and so the total is down to $85 million again. The way the integration of this is broken up is that you have 30%, which is a local levy, and 70% is state aid contribution. And so there you have your total. The question which is upon us today is, how are we doing based on the legislative report, the legislative audit that was done in 2005? We're making progress, but with some difficulty. And that is simply because of some of the stated points, the ambiguity in the law. And I'm referring to Minnesota Rule 3535. We need a little more guideline in that. So we're making some progress, but we still find some challenges because of the way the law was written. And that is not to say we're putting all the blame on the way the law is written. There is ample responsibility that the department should have done, but may not have, and we are in the process of addressing all those issues. The recent Supreme Court ruling may have some implication on using the word race as it relates to our integration revenue. It may or may not. As of now, there hasn't been any decision that has been made as far as amending the rule or what will happen. As we think of the integration revenue budget, we believe that each of the budgets that is submitted to our office needs to have the cost value in relation to two things. One is academic achievement, and two is social integration. We believe that if those two are being addressed by school districts, we may reach some balance. But I have to say, we need to define a little more what we mean by that. Integration value to isolated school districts. We talked about the concept of voluntary school districts. When we look at voluntary school districts and race-isolated school districts, are the efforts of the voluntary school districts really contributing to the desegregation or achieving that racial balance of the racial isolated school district? The short answer is no. And again, I mentioned earlier that there is no incentive for school districts to desegregate, because that means you're going to lose a portion of your money. So why should you raise your racial balance? Academic value is big. I think as we recall the presentation from Judy, she talked about the plethora of responses that districts were offering when she asked, what are you doing with your integration revenue dollars? Some think it's academic, closing the achievement gap. Some think it's reaching the racial balance, and what is it? I think a part of the questions that we're still asking is, how can we clarify this better so that districts that are willing and purposefully engaged into the practice of integration can achieve these goals, and we can measure them quantitatively and qualitatively. Efforts that support the budget criteria, since the report was issued in 2005, we've created a document called the Frequently Asked Questions. That's a document that guides school districts when they are putting together their budget that they're going to submit to us. And that document incorporates a lot of questions and answers in what to do, when to do, and how to do. Clinical practice publication was developed to showcase strategies that work well across the district. In working at the Department of Education, we quickly realized that school districts are not interested in what we want to learn, but they're more interested in what other schools, their colleagues in the field, are doing in order to replicate those strategies in their district and achieve great academic achievement for the students. And so that's why this promising practice document was created, with some of the fine examples that we've been able to compile from Minnesota. We, since and before the legislative audit was completed, there was a state desegregation conference that used to be administered but not regularly. But since 2005, we have organized a yearly integration conference in our state, and we will be having another conference this year to be able to share and provide more assistance to school districts that are participating in our integration program. Ongoing technical assistance is also part of the work that we do. I have to proudly say that we've increased the number of school site visits to be able to see what's happening in schools, and are we matching what we see on paper with what we see in reality when we visit those school districts. And having those courageous conversations with district officials, from the superintendent, principals, to program people, is really helping them to understand the value of why this work is needed. But again, they keep asking for more clarity, and I think that's some of the work that we're engaged in, trying to provide or put together a proposal that we'd like to present to legislature for implementation. One of the recommendations in the auditor's report was a standardized budget, and I am proud to present to you, Mr. Chair, and dear representative, that we did create a new integration budget revenue, which is very comprehensive, and I think you have that in your packet, and I wish I could have shown it after and explained a little bit what's in it and how we're able to monitor that. But a brief comment about the integration revenue budget is that for the number of years that we've had this program in place, we've never required districts to resubmit to us, meaning the Office of Desegregation, an expenditure report of what they do. They've done that through UFAR, but I'm referring to one that we look at and be able to say how much money was used in whatever categories that they had outlined, and did they actually use that money. So for the FY07 school year, all the school districts have finally turned in our office an expenditure report of what they are proposed to spend and what they spent. And as we speak, we are planning to start looking over those budgets and be able to come up with some findings that we'll be happy to share with you in the future. On the budget, again, it's more comprehensive than it used to be in the past because we added UFAR codes on the budget, and we also asked that they include participation numbers from the school, from their own school district and from the adjoining school district, so that we can see number of students, number of staff involved in the program, and then the same thing for the adjoining school district. And at the bottom, we also added a note and comment section. That is important because most of the time when you look at the budget, and if you can recall the auditor's presentation, some lines look fuzzy, and so how do you know what they mean by what they mean? And so in the note section at the bottom, that's where we're able to read what some of those unexplained line items are meant for. So I talked about field visit in brief. I don't know what the exact number was prior to 2005, but as of 2006-2007, a total of 60 school visits were done from our office. And keep in mind, there's only two people in our office who are involved in the work of desegregation for the entire state of Minnesota. So it's basically split in two. And so as you're thinking of why do we see some lapses in that, there is a human capital shortage in our office. We've been focusing more on seeing what works in buildings, but also building relationships. The agency is developing a formal protocol for site visits, so that's one of the things that are in the works. When we go to school, what do we see, what recommendation do we offer, and how do we follow up and ask if improvement has been made or not prior to the school district or the school to submit their three-year or four-year evaluation plan. Critical conversation and dialogue. Formal meetings will be held in 2007 with the leadership of the initiative. I think Leona alluded to that as she can, and I think Leona has only been in the office for probably 4 months or 5 months now, and 3 months. So I would over-exaggerating. And so in that short time, she was able to convene with the leaders of the three joint powers, East Metro, West Metro, Northwest Suburban, to be able to ask questions about what are they doing with the integration revenue that they're receiving. Are they really meeting the goals of intended practice? And what does the collaboration look like between them and the voluntary member district? So that's one of those meetings that has taken place. Racially identifiable school buildings are reviewed. And I think in the auditor's report we heard a little bit about this. Once a school district has been considered or notified as racially isolated, there is a determination process that is performed by one of my colleagues who has been in the department for a while, to be able to come with fact findings about what triggered the racial isolation of the district or the racial identification of that particular school. So, and we have letters that we've sent out to those districts that have been identified since 2005. So to that we've answered one of the questions that the auditors brought forth. The review of budgets and approvals have been improved in one way. We are and we're just finishing up our first draft of a rubric that will enable us to look at every school district integration budget the same way. It's something that we plan to share with every school district in the state of Minnesota at the integration conference that will take place, I believe, in February. The date is still up for discussion. So that's one of those mechanisms that was in place, and we found that will be very valuable, considering that they're all receiving this money for the same purpose. And why can't we have criteria for accepting or denying funds that are standard across the board? I'm not going to read to you the content of the integration conferences, but what we're able to achieve at the integration conferences was recruit key people from the University of Minnesota, from the Department of Justice, and other local people who can come and share best practices about integration in terms of social integration and academic integration in the schools. And so those are the slides that are following, and I think I will skip over those. You can read them at your leisure. And one of the important things that is good to realize is that we didn't only bring speakers to talk to a large group session, but we offered individual breakout sessions with topics that are of great concern to some of the districts that participate in our integration revenue program, so that they can ask best practice questions and how to implement those in their school district. And they range from things like school disruption, serving immigrant families, school attendance boundaries, world languages. As we spoke, as Judy presented, she talked about rural versus urban, and there is some major differences when you consider the two, and what's allowable for some rural district and what's not allowable for some urban district are some of the things we covered in this breakout session. What's on the horizon for 2007 and 2008? There has been, or there is actually in place, a magnet school task force that has been started. And the purpose of that magnet school task force is to do three things. One, create awareness of magnet schools in Minnesota and be able to clearly identify where they are, what their purpose is, and we know that historically speaking, magnet schools were instituted for the purpose of desegregation. So are we really finding that happening in our magnet schools, at least those that are funded through our integration revenue? The second goal of that magnet task force is to create a directory of all those schools so that families can be aware of what options they have in their school district so they can exercise their choice option. And the final one is to provide and publish an executive summary of magnet schools in Minnesota, best practices and what they are they the best kept secret in Minnesota, and then what do we know about them and what quantitative and qualitative data are coming out of magnet schools academically and socially. Second, budget deadline will be moved. It used to be that the budget deadline used to be the budget was submitted to the department by July 1st, and now we're going to move that deadline early on in April to allow better planning for school districts for whatever position they need to fill in or objective that they need to cover throughout the summer, because some of the integration revenue is used for summer programming or out-of-school time programming. I talked about the second annual conference that will be coming in February, and then with the direction of our new director, Leona Durden, we are planning to start an advisory board to resurrect the advisory board for our desegregation office, and that's basically made up of superintendent, principals, and other program people to be able to advise our office in what policies we're planning to move forward to the legislature or whatever other changes that we're planning to engage in. Integration revenue immediate goals, I talked about the rubric that's being developed, And the evaluation process has really been one of those of my great concern when I look at a program and X amount of dollars, and then there is no means of knowing if they did reach success or not. Not only that, but I think the reason why we are moving forward with a standardized evaluation, it's because the local evaluations that are done by each school district, it's easy for them to show that they've made progress for their own goals that they've set. And are they the goals of the state, or that the goals that the rural wants to see, or the progress that we hope to see by district receiving integration revenue dollars. We're compiling a report for the legislature that we'll be submitting to you guys by 2009. Challenges. There are plenty of challenges. No funding for Minnesota Inclusive Education Rule means that many districts want to use integration revenue primarily for diversity, curriculum, and training needs, as we heard the auditors report to us. What's wrong with that? Not all districts get integration revenue, yet all districts must abide by the inclusive education rule. And this does not necessarily lead to desegregation. More challenges. The funding formula, as we've heard from the auditors, is problematic. It's not tied directly to difficulty or challenges that districts faces with integration work. However, the OLA suggests that options that link funding to protected student population is unlikely to work given the recent Supreme Court ruling. Existing definition that trigger funding based on racial counts may also be problematic given the Supreme Court ruling. There's plenty of challenges, Mr. Chairman and dear representative. MD has difficulty evaluating the success of individual district desegregation plan when the purpose of integration revenue program as defined by the state law and the desegregation rule is unclear. Additional staffing is needed at MDE if serious work is to be done evaluating programs and withholding revenue from those districts that do not accomplish the work. The current formula tends to reward rather than penalize programs that don't work since its ineffective strategy continues to generate revenue, but one that works caused schools and districts to fall off the eligibility list, and I talked about that earlier, and is what I would like to close with. We need to work together is a message that we constantly bring to the district that we work with. Our students and families are counting on us to be leaders. We need to strengthen and clarify Minnesota's integration policy to be a creative tool for justice and equity in the educational experiences. We need to reward those school districts who do this difficult work well and stop business as usual in districts that do not. And some final quotes to offer some respective practices for us. Marian Anderson, an African-American opera singer, said, "There are many persons ready to do what is right because in their hearts they know it is right, but they hesitate, waiting for the other fellow to make the first move. And he, in turn, waits for you." That is our presentation, and let me quickly summarize by going through the 9 points that the auditor had suggested to us and what we've done for each of the particular points. I'm going to start with the recommendation number 3. The FAQ, I guess I'm going to have to read what the recommendation is because not everyone has the auditor's report. Recommendation number 3, I'm sorry, my mouth is dry. The Minnesota Department of Education should use its statutory authority to establish criteria for allowable integration revenue expenditure that reflects district and different responsibilities. That is the creation of the frequently asked questions that we've put in place to assist school districts in reaching that, and then the newly developed rubric for approving budgets, which is in its draft form and review. Recommendation number four, the Minnesota Department of Education should fulfill responsibilities for overseeing the integration revenue program. Specifically, MDE staff should evaluate district integration plan to determine whether the plans were implemented and goals substantially met. Review information provided by the district with a racially identifiable school to determine whether the district has engaged in intentional segregation, and provide additional guidance and oversight to districts that have had one or more racially identifiable schools for the three consecutive years. There is a three-year evaluation that's needed for racially isolated school districts that we haven't done a great job at. And I talked about what we are drafting as an evaluation method. However, the point of following up with school districts that have been notified as racially isolated or schools that are racially identified, we have, since the audit was written, we have engaged in that process. Recommendation number five, the Minnesota Department of Education should identify promising integration practices implemented by school districts around the state and regularly disseminate this information to all participants. That is the promising practice document that we have in place, and that each of the school districts that are involved in our integration revenue have at their hand. Recommendation number six, the legislature should require districts that want to voluntarily participate in the integration revenue program to obtain approval from the Minnesota Department of Education. We've been able to do that, and voluntary programs since the audit was published have contacted us, and we've led them into the six steps that are needed to become part of, to become a voluntary school district. But more work is needed to be able to ask the real reason why they want to become a voluntary program. And again, remember my comment about there is no incentive to desegregate, but there is more willingness to become a voluntary program. Recommendation number seven, the legislature should give the Minnesota Department of Education authority to approve the integration budget of the Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Duluth School District. That has yet to be done. And finally, recommendation number eight, the legislature should consider revising the integration revenue funding formula. And I think that's one of the biggest concerns that we have. Thank you for your time, and Mr. Chair, with your direction, we'll be willing to take some questions.
Thank you for your presentation, and we appreciate it. Is there any questions of the committee members? Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have one left to me by Representative Hilstrom, who had to leave because she had another commitment, and then I have a couple of my own, but I'll start with her. She was wondering, wanting to follow up on the question on textbooks. And you probably heard Ms. Randall say that maybe when the department was approving budgets before you had this very nice, clear budget process, which was obviously before the two of you were there. But do you have any information to show that if the department did know the use was something like history books, would that have been approved? And would it be now?
Based on my conversation with my colleague who was there prior to me, it is very possible that textbooks were purchased. And I think the area in which they may have been purchased, one is when you look at rural districts. That's where I would believe and recall where textbooks were purchased as opposed to an urban district. However, in the urban district, there are through the integration revenue program, out-of-school time programs, or after-school programs, some schools, in order to address the issue of academic achievement, were able to purchase reading books. I don't know if those are considered textbook or not, but I see a clear difference between the two. And those reading books were necessarily to address the issue of struggling readers within those school districts so that they can continue to make that gain. And the reason why those textbooks were purchased is when you look at students' demographic in school districts, those who can afford and cannot afford, so school districts have been allowed, thank you, have been allowed to purchase that textbook. But I don't, based on the last budget approval process, I do not recall a lot of provisions for textbook purchase.
So, Mr. Chair, to get this straight for Representative Hilstrom and I report back, would the history textbook be approved now without some clarification from the legislature?
As of my last budget approval process, it's a case-by-case basis. Because, and let me address this in a different way. When we look at integration in the rural settings, where we've allowed integration revenue to fund Spanish programs, so in that case, it may be possible that the school district ask to purchase textbooks, because part of the integration mechanism in a small rural community that is populated with Latinos, teaching Spanish becomes an inclusionary practice for the whole district and provide integration for students who may not be acquainted with the culture of, I guess, the protected class representation.
Mr. Chair, I'm still confused. You mentioned reading textbooks, Spanish textbooks, but what about history textbooks?
I am not aware of any history textbook. It may have happened prior to my arrival.
Right, but Mr. Chair,
Representative
Nimue, I'm wondering though, now, without clarification from the legislature, would history textbooks be approved?
Oh, without the clarification from the legislature. Again, it's, as I say, case-by-case basis. If by a budget that was submitted and the integration practice is clearly identified and we see the value for it, and we see it as a mechanism that does not supplant the general education funding, we may allow that.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. And that was President Hilstrom's question. I can wait on mine.
Go right ahead.
Okay, thank you. I had three others. And the first one is, if with the new charges, you said you have two people and you need more staff, what if the legislature didn't give you more staff but gave you more assignments? Would you do that?
The answer is that it's going to be impossible to get a meaningful evaluation or progress in monitoring those programs.
Hey, thank you, Mr. Chair. The second one is the Supreme Court ruling. I wish Representative Mariani were here. I went to a panel at William Mitchell recently that he was on, and some of the others of us might have been there as well, and they examined this issue carefully. And there they were saying that, like, is it the choice is yours? They used low socioeconomic status as a criteria, because that really correlated anyway with students of color, quite at least at this time in history in Minnesota. Is that something, have you examined the Supreme Court ruling at all, or is that something left for us at the legislature to do, in which case I would ask that we cover that topic in more depth at a future meeting, or do you have any insights into that?
As far as our work is concerned at the Department of Education, we have not done anything with the Supreme Court ruling.
Okay, thank you.
However, we've been doing background search in terms of what we can see as best practices done around the country or with our Choices Yours program to be able to bring it to the conversation table.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My last question.
Representative Grady.
Yes, and either Ms. Durden or Mr. Nimue, the report that you're reporting to the legislature in 2009, but I'm expecting us to come up with something in this committee for 2008, and so I'm just wondering, is there anything in the report that the auditor did that the department does not support? we won't have your report while we're asking this year.
I've looked at the report, and I think we support all the recommendations that were brought forth by the auditor. You're welcome.
Thank you, Representative Grinding. Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to compliment you both on your efforts and what you're doing. The legislative auditor gave you a lot of recommendations, a lot of tasks. You seem to have jumped in the last year, in the last 3 months, to really try to address some of these issues, and I thank you for it. My first question to you is you've indicated in writing and here to the committee that you need more help, you need more staff. As I understand it, your responsibilities include more than just integration revenue, is that correct?
That is correct.
So you're in charge of oversight, excuse me, Mr. Chair, of more than just integration revenue, school choice programs, and all kinds of other issues. So my next question then is, how many other people are working in your department at your level on those other issues in addition to integration revenue?
In our department?
Yes.
There are two people for the integration revenue. And the other, our division has, I mean, we are composed of, you know, charter schools and all those, but directly in the work of integration there are two people.
Representative Morgan.
Mr. Chair, two people in addition to the two of you, or you two?
Just the two of us.
Okay. Thank you. We're spending approximately, Mr. Chair, if you will.
Morgan.
And I don't know if these two can answer the next question I'm going to have. We're spending approximately $85 million on this program. I know we're spending as much as that or more than that, perhaps, on another program, the Alternative Teacher Professional Pay System program. And I'm just wondering if there's anybody from NDE who might indicate to us how many staffers they have working on oversight in that program. You know if there's anybody here, Mr. Chair, who can help us with that?
I don't know. Can you guys answer that question?
Mr. Chair, no, we don't have the exact number. How many people
are working on that? Is there any other person from the department here that could possibly answer that question? Wow. Would that be okay, Representative Morgan?
I would appreciate that.
Okay.
Very much.
Thank you.
Because I think you two are doing a good job, and I guess we'd like to get you some help. And if we're going to spend $85 million a year on this, we want to make sure that we're doing it well and doing it right and really, really helping kids out. So thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions of the committee? Senator?
Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to ask Mr. Nimbwe. You said in your presentation that you now have a new integration revenue budget proposed, and in there you mentioned again and again the measures of social and academic integration. Could you tell me what that is?
Yes. Thank you, Senator. By academic integration, I think we're all aware of the notion of multicultural education. So multicultural education is only a part of academic integration. By academic integration, we are specifically talking to what is being accomplished with integration revenue in terms of school programming or staff that are being paid with integration revenue, and what is the relationship to student achievement. How much of that do we see in terms of academics? So let's take an example that I've enjoyed seeing while visiting some school districts. In the after-school program at Columbia Heights, by the way, a phenomenal program. In their after-school program at the elementary school, which has about, 400 students, there is 267 students that stay after school for after-school program. And they're using some of the integration revenue to be able to fund those programs. It's not just one program, it's a series of programs that incorporate academic activities, academic enrichment, as well as social activities. Fine arts, they bring in artists who come and teach students how to sing or dance or play a variety of instruments. And also while they're involved in those exercises, they're also involved in the academic side of it. And that's what I mean by social and academic integration. And is it, are we seeing school districts that are using integration revenue for professional development for activities that directly address integration activities rather than pedagogical training that doesn't reflect in their practice in order to achieve or give them the expertise to work with a diverse population? That's what I mean by academic and social integration.
Representative,
thank you, Mr. Chairman. A follow-up question then. So when you measure the success of the investment in terms of academic achievement of that particular program that you mentioned, for instance, are you saying that you will conduct an evaluation of academic progress of those very kids that are enrolled in that after-school program, and if you're able to measure academic progress, they continue to receive the funding, or how is that after-school program tied to academic achievement, and then what is academic achievement in that context?
Academic achievement in the bigger concept of how are these students progressing throughout school is how I can say the evaluation has been done. As far as MD evaluating it through the use of integration revenue, we haven't done a good job at it. But when we're looking at academic achievement, students who are coming to school with a low ability and yet performing well, and at the end of the school year, the results from the MCA, we've seen progress. And the plus of integration revenue usage in that particular program in Columbia Heights is as simple as this. In 4 years ago, they weren't making AYT. Last year and the year before, they've made AYT with great progress. So when you're looking at test scores of those students who are staying in the after-school program or through the summer programming where you have ESL teachers who are going on a weekly basis to the students' homes to read with them for an hour, leave books with them, and go and come back the following week, that's part of that academic progress that I am referring to. So those activities that are happening year-round because they're using integration revenue, and then because of our state standards of measure of how students do through MCAs, we're able to see that many of these students in those districts are achieving. That's what I mean by that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a final question. So if I were to measure achievement gap and academic success in those programs and tie that funding to the MCA test, I would be doing the right thing. I would not be off track by doing an analysis of that investment, right? Because it is tied to MCA.
That's only one way of looking at it.
Okay.
What I can give you, maybe demographically speaking, at Columbia, I have 75% of the students are free and reduced lunch. And so when we're talking about school districts that are using integration revenue to address the needs of the students in the protected class, that's a classic example of a school that has successfully done it. If we look at goals stated in the desegregation plan, are they meeting all those goals in light, I mean, as a way to look at evaluation, not all the goals are being met, but some are being met. And so that's why we talked about creating an evaluation tool that will be somewhat standard so that we can measure more than just looking at MCA as a means to success in school.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other more questions of the committee? I have a couple here. In the report, it says that the legislators haven't given quite a guideline on what integration funding can be and what it should be about. But it also stated that some of the integration funding was used to purchase computers, supplies, those type of items. What has the department put in place as to date, or is it that still continuing to be a problem as far as purchasing those items?
The department is currently working on, Mr. Chair, the department is currently working on some guidelines. An example that I may use to address that issue of purchase services is commonly found in school districts that have magnet schools. That's where you'll see a purchase for equipment. The concept of magnet schools is one that's trying to keep up with the evolution of technology. And so when you're looking at a magnet school that has a STEM program, when they're purchasing equipment, it goes directly into that those programs. Now the question is, who's the beneficiary of those newly purchased equipment? What is the percentage of students from adjoining school districts that are benefiting from those equipment? And it hasn't been clear, and that's why we are working on putting some guidelines, for example, for how much can be spent on equipment in some magnet schools, and then if so, how much can be spent in equipment, in salaries, in professional development, and so, and it's big, and you can imagine, Mr. Chairman, in 1 year, at the same time monitoring the program, and at the same time trying to read back in the history to be able to see what has worked and what hasn't worked, it takes some time to come up with a comprehensive plan to be able to address some of these issues.
So, just to address that issue again, so just so we're getting some clarity here, we're making guidelines, and the report says the legislature should be setting the guidelines. You're telling me now the department should be setting the guidelines. Who should be setting the guidelines?
That's a very good question. I think within the current guidelines, we have some authority into how we can progress while we're monitoring this program. And what we're asking at the legislature is to be able to review the intended purpose of the rule. And with that, in collaboration with MDE staff and the legislature, we can come up with those guidelines.
The other question I had, your purpose for the statewide policy task force, what is that purpose going to be about? Is it just to come up with ideas, set policy, or talk a little bit more about that?
Mr. Chairman, are you referring to the advisory board?
Statewide policy task force that you're forming.
Yeah, that is to, one is to, if there used to be an advisory board that used to work directly with the director of the school choice programming services as well as staff from the desegregation office. And the intended purpose is, if we are to bring some new changes, that advisory board that is composed of superintendent, district principals, and other program people to be able to get more input before we move forward. So that will be the purpose. And also, they will be able to offer further guidance in how we can move forward with that before it is presented to the legislature.
So this task force would be formed as a diverse task force, or could you say a little bit more background to that, or is it going to be principals, administration, would it be legislators, would it be policymakers, you know, tell me a little more about that.
Mr. Chairman, we're planning to make it very inclusive because in the practice of integration, when we speak of having a community collaborative group, we want to have representation from various diverse groups as well as parents, community members, legislators, and any person who can come and contribute to that.
And I guess my last question is this, your budget deadline moving to April, what was the purpose of changing it? Because it seems like it's in January, you said, and then or July, excuse me. Now it's going to move back to April. That gives the folks that are into the integration revenue funding a little more time to do what now?
Mr. Chair, the reason we moved it to April was because in July, when the plans come in, we look at them, and we found this year that there was some substantial and a lot of different issues, and so we were back and forth. We wanted to make sure that the conversation, the dialogue between the districts would have the opportunity to have that dialogue so that by the time school starts, each district would know exactly would have it would no longer be dialogue because it went into what September this year before you know where the dialogue was still coming up, was still going on, and it was just unfair to the students. And so we moved it up so that that dialogue can take place. That's the purpose of it.
Senator Hyder.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Excuse me. Yes, I just a couple of questions and a couple of thoughts. When you came up with the recommendations and when you look at students, and again, a senator was kind of going around about the same manner that I'm trying to address the issue of mobility is never taken into consideration. And it should be. Another factor is minority student. We got minority students coming up in my district that come from the very, very inner part of Mexico. They're coming from a very, very poverty-stricken area, no electricity, dirt floors, everything else. So you get a student coming in where their parents do not have a language. They cannot write. They cannot read. So I think that when you look at recommendations, when we're going forth, we should look at that as well. I know St. Paul has some of those distinct problems as well. From some of the students are coming in with a very, very more difficult system for the school system to look at. The other thing is, and correct me, and I don't know who can answer this, but the intent of the legislation, this is the result of some legislation that passed a good number of years ago. And I always try to look at the intent of the legislation. My understanding, and Representative Griley perhaps knows more about it than I do, was that this is the result of that court case that Representative Dominguez referred to in 1973 that was tied up in court. And there were some issues, and I don't know how Duluth got in there, but I think Duluth is one of the bigger regional centers at the time. And that's perhaps how they got in there. But I think the intent was that we had to take care of that problem that a lot of the schools were having with high concentration of minorities. And I think there were some busing, things of this sort, that were the result of it. If that's true, if all those things are true, why are we allowing sites? If we have, say, for example, Duluth, that is not a very big school district. They have a site, and they qualify, even though the entire population is less than school districts that they can qualify under those low numbers, that they can establish a site and qualify. Shouldn't they be required to do what the intent of this legislation was to mix the students up? And I think sometimes we have to look at the original intent of the legislation here. And I think that it's like the miracle, I always refer to the education miracle Wendy Anderson. It worked really well back in the 70s, but we really muddled it up. And I think we've got an example right here of how, again, perhaps good intent, good legislation has been muddled up. And I think that in the recommendations, I was hoping to see something referring to the original intent of the legislation. But anyway, so much.
Would you like to respond?
I think I mentioned, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I mentioned that we have some propositions that are in work to be able to address what the representative has brought forth. It will be premature of me to share them in openly while they're still in discussion form and refining, which I think will be very, very productive and complementary to the integration program if approved. And I think with respect to the movement of students, I think the Choice is Yours program, which was created in Minneapolis as a result of the settlement for the segregation court, has proven some success and has allowed students to be able to move at their will or their parents' will. And it's an example that we can look at and see how to refine it better.
Any other members like to have any questions? Panel? We got about 7 more minutes, and I just want to do one thing. I'm going to allow 2 questions from folks from the floor if they so, so choose to. Two questions to the panel, and we got about 7 minutes. So if someone wants to have a question to the panel, this is their time. Otherwise, we can adjourn early. Yusuf, and identify yourself for the record, please.
It says I'm Sondra Erickson. Good afternoon. My name is Yusuf M. Jenny, and I'm a staff member at St. Paul Public Schools. I really don't have a question, but rather a comment. And I want to commend Ms. Durden and her staff for their willingness to invite representatives from affected school districts and the community to participate in the discussion on how we go forward and how the Minnesota Department of Education, school districts, and communities work together on this. Because I think unless what we do is mutually beneficial, the department can't do its job, the community can't accomplish the objectives that the legislature originally intended. And hopefully, through that process of a statewide advisory committee, more effective and collaborative recommendations can be brought into the public dialogue, and the legislature can make informed choices about clarifying the rule and how to best address the needs of the kids, because the kids ought to be the intended beneficiaries, and I think anything that we can do to ensure that will result in a better department, better schools, and a better community. So I just want to commend them for their willingness to engage in a conversation with the impacted parties within school districts and communities to come up with workable solutions.
Thank you, sir. Anyone else like to make a comment or question? If you could come forward, please, and say your name for the record.
Hi, I'm Cheryl Morgan Spencer. I'm here this afternoon on behalf of the Minneapolis Urban League, as well as the Brown Power Base Project. My question really speaks to this issue of confusion. And I've heard a lot of comments this afternoon about the intended uses of the integration revenue money, but it is intended for integration revenue, right? That's what we're talking about. We're talking about integrating the schools, correct? That's the intended use, right?
Right.
Okay, so I just want to make sure that I leave folks with that notion that the integration revenue funding is for integrating the schools. Thank you.
Thank you for your comment. We appreciate that. Again, this is one meeting out of three, I do believe, and we don't have the date set yet. We got to put our calendars together. There will be emails going out and letting you know when the next meeting is. I hope to convene that meeting shortly so we can continue on with this process. I know the we want to bring something for the upcoming session, so we want to work on this quite quickly and get something productive done in these meetings. So again, I want to thank the panel for coming out, the audience for coming out, and also the committee members. Thank you for your time, and meeting adjourned.